positioning himself as a voice of the South, a voice of anti-globalization and of the non-aligned. For anyone in that General Assembly hall who's ever chafed under what was perceived as US hegemony, they will have found something they might have liked in that speech. Just like Barack Obama before him a few hours ago, he set forward a number of goals for the future, the reform of the United Nations, a new global economic architecture, the eradication of weapons of mass destruction, environmental protection, issues that will have found a lot of support around the world, I should imagine. Not mentioned, though, the Iranian nuclear power program, I should say, and which is alleged to be a nuclear weapons program by some in that hall. During his speech, he was greeted by a number of customary walkouts, whether that was because of his speech or whether because customarily at this time, it's almost 8 o'clock p.m. in New York. It is cocktail hour at the UN. So I don't know whether it was actually directly around his speech, but there were walkouts. Hilary Mann-Leverett is with us. We'll get her analysis in just a moment, and we will continue with our coverage and analysis of the day's events at the United Nations General Assembly in a few moments. Hilary, though, so no nukes.
No, he doesn't discuss the nuclear program. He is trying to position himself on the issues, just like the Chinese leader Hu Jintao did and just like President Obama did. President Obama, I think, laid out a course where he regretted past political decisions by the Bush administration and economic policies by the United States. The Chinese leader Hu Jintao put forward a vision of stability, peaceful resolution of disputes almost at any cost, two different visions. Ahmadinejad comes in with a third way. His way is not stability at any cost. His way is not peaceful resolution of disputes at any cost. His way is to stand up for peoples around the world who are dispossessed, displaced, feeling oppressed, and particularly the Palestinians. He makes the U.S. Policy of using military occupation in response to terrorism, be it in Iraq, Afghanistan, or supporting it by the Israelis in the Palestinian territories. He takes that as a cardinal problem in international relations, and that he's going to be the champion to overturn that.
And that may just because it is the top of the hour now, and if anyone is just joining us, this is Al Jazeera's continued coverage of the UN General Assembly, at the risk of saying what I just said a moment ago, if you are joining us. And over the next half an hour, we'll be analyzing the events of the UN General Assembly, beginning with that speech by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, which has just concluded at the General Assembly. So that, what was interesting about the speech, I suppose, was it was more of a sort of coherent thesis about the world order this time around, rather than the rather confusing spiritual tract that he read out last time at the UN General Assembly. He is positioning himself this time around as a serious leader.
I think he clearly is. He sees Iran's role in the region as greater on the increase. I think globally he sees Iran as a critical player, and he sees the U.S. as a power in decline. China really is the other view, and he has presented himself as not someone who is opposed to Chinese policies, but presents a way for people where religion is more important in their life, where standing up for their rights is more important in their life, justice is more important in their life. He represents a whole category of people, what you could traditionally call the South, as you, I think, very accurately pointed to. He represents more of those people than I think potentially China can. And he sees this as a niche for leadership and has seized upon it.
And I suppose that would help explain the closeness of Venezuela now with Ahmadinejad, mm-hmm. and that other, that kind of Bolivarian, sort of Latin American side of the South. And now we have this Middle Eastern side, and there's a sense of this a sort of a global movement emerging, I suppose, is what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I think instead of him being a kind of desperate leader paralyzed by illegitimacy from a problematic election in his country, he really sees himself, I think, as a leader of a country on the rise that can speak for people who are dispossessed and angry at what the United States has done over the course, particularly the past 8 years.
And we'll get onto that in a moment, but we have what Ahmadinejad said about the recent conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan queued up, and I'm sure, actually, again, there are many in the South who will agree with what he said.
Iraq. Mm-hmm. Look at the situation in Iraq and in Afghanistan. It is no longer possible to bring a country under military occupation in the name of fighting terrorism or drug trafficking while the production of illicit drugs has multiplied. Terrorism has widened its dimensions and has tightened its grips. Thousands of innocent people have been killed, injured, or displaced. Infrastructures have been destroyed, and regional security has been seriously jeopardized. And those who've created the current disastrous situation continue to blame others. How can you speak of friendship and solidarity with other nations while you expand your military bases in different parts of the world, including in Latin America? This situation cannot continue.
And there's that sense of global solidarity again. The U.S. expanding its bases in Colombia right now, much to the chagrin of nations in the region, particularly Venezuela, but certainly all the other ALBA community, except for Colombia and Mexico, I think, are the only countries who are saying, look, there's no problem with this. So again, that global, he's not a loner, he's not a despot, he's not part of an axis of evil anymore, which, interestingly, you pointed out earlier, in conversation with me, though, Obama is still very much using the Bush template when he discusses these countries, isn't he?
Yeah, very striking. Obama, in his speech, just hours before to the General Assembly, laid out an almost the same kind of axis of evil that President Bush had. But here, of course, the regime in Iraq has already been overthrown, so you just have North Korea and Iran. But he lumped them together as if they were pursuing the exact same policies of pursuing nuclear weapons and domination and terror throughout the world. When in fact, of course, North Korea has nuclear weapons and Iran does not. It's a very stark difference, but Obama, like Bush, lumped them together.
Now, when we talk of credibility there, wasn't there a bit of a problem in his, I don't know, utter denial of any problems with the election? This is what he said about the election in Iran that recently was held.
Our nation has successfully gone through a glorious and fully democratic election, opening a new chapter for our country in the march towards national progress and enhanced international interactions. They entrusted me once more with a large majority with this heavy responsibility. And now I want to declare that our great nation that has made great contributions to world civilization and the Islamic Republic of Iran as one of the most democratic and progressive governments in the world, is ready to mobilize all its cultural, political, and economic capabilities to engage in a constructive process aimed at addressing international concerns and challenges and confronting the challenges that face human society.
I bet you the U.S. cable networks are looking at that one and saying, yeah, come on, this guy's a madman, and so on and so forth. That was definitely a poke in the eye for those, certainly in the United States, who are protesting outside.
Absolutely, to the throngs of protesters in New York, to Ahmadinejad's presence in New York City. But I think it was also a poke in the eye to many in Iran, and not just among the reformists who perceive that there were troubles in the election. I think also that across the spectrum in Iran, nobody would have called it glorious, even among many of whom, and I think probably the majority of Iranians think that Ahmadinejad won that election. Whether it was a specific percentage or not, they think he won. But no one, I don't think, at this point would call it glorious.
Now, on the subject, though, of this sort of this global alliance seeking a change in the world order, Evo Morales is currently speaking, the Bolivian leader. Let's dip in to see what he's saying.
Working with his rebellious people to uphold democracy. How good it would be if in the United Nations, this great international organization, if it were to issue a resolution issuing an ultimatum to the military dictatorship in Honduras, and that the only internationally recognized president could be reinstated as president. I'm convinced that the United States would not accept individuals leading governments who are seeking their liberation in Latin America. And I have even heard from some friends and colleagues, some brothers, that they would, what would happen if there were a dictatorship in Bolivia? And they said, there is, of course, no United States embassy in the United States. There are coup d'etats occurring everywhere. But let me tell you, my brothers, fellow presidents, that there were attempts to bring about a coup d'etat in Bolivia through the involvement of the international community, in particular of the Southern Cone, we were able to halt that civilian coup d'etat. It was not a military attempt at a coup d'etat in my country. It was a failed attempt. For these reasons, we are convinced that military bases cannot guarantee social peace, democracy, or integration. We have also been discussing the subject of climate change, and I would like to use this opportunity to propose a number of issues to you which are of the utmost importance for those, all of us, who inhabit Mother Earth. For the indigenous movement, this is Mother Earth. When it comes to, for those of us who live in peaceful existence on this planet, not only in peaceful existence with human individuals, we live in peaceful existence with Mother Earth, which is life-giving, which provides water, natural resources, oxygen. We've all considered the well-being, the welfare of our peoples. We are struggling, we are fighting for the well-being of our peoples, but first of all, we must ensure the well-being of Mother Earth to that end. If we are unable to guarantee the well-being of Mother Earth, then it will be impossible to guarantee the well-being of our countrymen, of our peoples, all dwelling on this planet. And I've reached the conclusion that Mother Earth, or Planet Earth, can and will exist with or without human life. But human life cannot exist without Mother Earth. After having listened to many statements made, and also after having listened to my brothers, I've reached the conclusion that at this point in time, this new century, the 21st century, it will be more important than ever before to defend the rights of Mother Earth, just as important to defend her rights as to defend human rights. If we do not protect Mother Earth, then there will be no point in defending human rights.
Bolivian President Evo Morales with an impassioned defense of human rights and again, a call for a new world order where the environment is also respected, and a denunciation of coup d'etats in Latin America, as far as I could tell, as we got in there, notably the one in Honduras, and they cut away to the Honduran representative of the UN General Assembly there. That is still, the UN doesn't recognize the de facto regime in Tegucigalpa, the Honduran capital, right now. So those figures were obviously loyal to Manuel Zelaya, the deposed president, and applauded Evo Morales warmly. Hillary Mann Leverett is still with us at the National Security Council and the State Department formerly, and a number of other U.S. government agencies in the past. I mean, I suppose that's another issue. I mean, even on Honduras, the Obama administration has wavered. We heard them wavering on Israel, Palestine, and so on. And there are these connections, between hemispheres, between Latin America and the Middle East, which are easy to exploit as a result, you see. And it's happening as we speak.
And these fears of particularly CIA activity, covert operations trying to undermine regimes that may not be democratically elected in an American sense in particular, but do represent passions and concerns for justice and equality in many of these countries. You know, it's very interesting. There are some recently declassified documents that show when Nixon was serious about rapprochement with China to really change the relationship between the U.S. and China, he called off covert operations in Tibet that were aimed at undermining Mao's government in China. He called them off unilaterally before we started the talks with China. We have a similar issue here. There was $400 million allocated under the Bush administration to undermine the Islamic Republic of Iran. Obama could do a similar thing here in over covert activities in Latin America. This is something that unites a lot of leaders across hemispheres, continuing concerns about U.S. covert activity, whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, Latin America, Iran. We've seen in the past that when the U.S. cuts it out, like with China, it works, and there's a realist realignment of relations that helps the United States, benefits the United States and the international order. But Obama has yet to make some of those difficult decisions.
Yeah, we'll find that in dealing with Mohamed Ahmadinejad's speech. Let's just hear what he had to say about weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons in particular.
مناسبات اقتصادی.
A new course is needed, in fact, that would help promote justice and progress worldwide by flourishing the potentials and talents of all nations, thus bringing well-being for all and for future generations. Reforming the international political relations based on the promotion of lasting peace and friendship, eradication of arms race and elimination of all nuclear, chemical and biological weapons to pave the way for all nations to have access to advanced and peaceful technologies.
Well, I mean, that doesn't sound very controversial, does it? That seems to be in line with what I've heard from Barack Obama, Gordon Brown, Dmitry Medvedev and everything. Everything's going to be all right for these negotiations starting on October the 1st, then.
Well, you know, it's also very interesting that Ahmadinejad brings in the issue of chemical and biological weapons. For a long time, there's been a divide in the Middle East where particularly the Israelis have called for a weapons of mass destruction free zone that focuses on chemical and biological weapons, along with the nuclear weapons, to have it as a package because, of course, the Israelis have the nuclear weapons, but some Arab states also have biological and chemical stockpiles. They've always insisted it be part of a package. And here you have Ahmadinejad actually giving voice to trying to address this as a package for a weapons of mass destruction free zone in the region and throughout the world.
It really does chime in with what Dmitry Medvedev just said a few hours ago about these zones.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the way forward then, perhaps? In negotiations that are coming up?
I think a comprehensive packages, ways to address issues in a more comprehensive way instead of just singling Iran out on the nuclear issue.
But the U.S. already, after the IAEA conference a week or two ago, just ignored the resolution that Israel should sign on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, for example. The U.S. would still not be on board with this particular route of negotiation.
You know, if you look back at some of the things Obama even wrote in college, I think his strategic impulse is there, but his advisors are really standing in the way. It'll be a question to see whether with the give and take in negotiations, particularly the U.S.-Russian negotiations, whether the U.S. can get there. I have a glimmer of hope, not a lot, but a glimmer that Obama does have the strategic impulse to go that way.
Hilary Mann Leverett, as always, thank you very much for your on-the-spot analysis of Ahmadinejad's speech.